Now, when I say it's not a natural market, the natural power market has a time horizon of 1 or 2 years. So someone has to step in and take this tenor risk. And that's why it becomes quite expensive to provide such a contract, for example, from a trading perspective. And it's also not the natural buying horizon from a corporate. So a lot of technical terms, but that's a key thing. And the problem is right now, how can you expand this market? Because we're talking 10, 15 gigawatts of assets realized on the PPAs, but we got to potentially realize triple, quadruple of those volumes per annum. And there's just not the market there for this, if we have to stick to 10 PPAs. I think that's probably the biggest and fascinating opportunity in the PPA space.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Transmission for our first episode of 2024. In today's episode, Quentin is joined by Luca Pedretti, Chief Operations Officer and co-founder of Pexapark. Over the conversation, they discuss power purchase agreements, or PPAs. How do they work and what does the future of power purchasing look like? If you are enjoying the podcast, please consider hitting subscribe and giving us a rating. It really helps us reach a wider audience and ensures that you never miss an episode. And with that, let's jump in.
Hello, Luca.
Hi, Quentin.
This is a very special podcast because it's the week before Christmas and no one's doing any proper work. And so we're just going to have a chat about Pexapark PPAs. And then really, we're going to spend a lot of the conversation talking about your contrarian views because you have a lot of them. And I know a couple of them and I'm quite excited for you to share them with our listeners. And funnily enough, you've logged into this recording as Mr. PPA. So firstly, is that your title or does anyone call you that? And what is a PPA?
Well, I wish it would be my title. It's not yet. I'm trying hard to be an influencer in the industry. But so what is this PPA? It's not the Professional Photographer Association that what it was when you Googled it a few years ago. It's a power purchase agreement. And I'm sure we're going to talk a bit about it. Yeah, how did I get into that? I'm an energy trader and originator by heart. By profession, also by accident. I did this first PPA 15 years ago, and I haven't stopped since then. And that's how I got to co-found Pexapark 6 years ago.
Before we talk about Pexapark, this contract, this power purchase agreement thing, who are the counterparties? How do you use it and why is it special? I think there's no point talking about Pexapark until we've covered all of the basics of that.
A power purchase agreement in the end is a bilateral agreement. So you have a seller, you have a buyer, and you want to govern the exchange of electrons, either physically or financially. And the three things you have to get done or regulate in this agreement is how you structure volume, how you price it, and you got to find some wording on credit. And in our space, when we talk PPA, it's typically a 10-year or long-term agreement. It's linked to the financing of new capacity, a wind park, a solar park.
So it's a buyer and a seller, and it's often related to new energy projects, right? What does that mean?
As it is related to a new project, it typically links to finance. So what does a PPA do? It secures revenue for a long period of time. And by securing revenue, you can get financing. You can leverage up the project. And that's where PPAs came in. It used to be all feed-in tariffs. So you had a government or a government-backed entity providing this revenue, guaranteeing the price. And PPAs came in 10, 15 years ago to do essentially the same, just with private offtake. And it is still to today, the main lever of a PPA is to be seen from a financing perspective.
So what sort of assets are we talking about here?
Well, we started, the first PPAs were done for onshore wind projects in Sweden. And then it was like a wave spreading from market to market. And when you look at it today, it's 60-65% of the assets realized on the PPAs are solar parks or offshore or wind. So basically, you could contract any kind of renewable power capacity under a PPA. But the main things are, of course, solar, as it has become cheap, plenty, and it's easy to realize.
All right, and now we get to talk about Pexapark. Pexapark is a business we've been working at Modo. We've been working with Pexapark for a couple of years now. It's been a great privilege to see you guys build a great business. And it's got a hell of a coverage, right? Geographically and different types of assets and complexity. So I want to dig into to that in more detail. But firstly, what is Pexapark, the company that you founded? And what's the mission and what are you trying to do?
Yeah, so the company is now 6 years old. I think the big background to Pexapark is renewables facing merchant risk, price risks. That's the story of Pexapark. And the purpose of the company is very simple. We want to make power markets more efficient. And we do this by creating and providing software that allows to manage renewable investments. And we make the PPA market transparent. So we provide reference prices for this energy transition. Because in the end, if you don't know what the fair price is to transact, it makes transactions harder. And finally, we help clients just to get PPAs done.
And so who are the customers? What kind of customer profiles do you help solve problems for? And what are their big problems?
What is the big problem we're facing in the market? PPAs were the main tool to get financing. And the long-term PPA market is not a natural beast. So just going out there and getting a 10-year PPA is nothing which you do quickly. I mean, when we look at the total market, we're talking 150 to 200 transactions. It's huge volumes which are involved. You have to finance a project where someone is spending hundreds of millions of euros potentially. So there are a lot of stakeholders involved, lenders, off-takers, a lot of credit risk. So this is not going super quick. Now, when I say it's not a natural market, the natural power market has a time horizon of 1 or 2 years. So someone has to step in and take this tenor risk. And that's why it becomes quite expensive to provide such a contract, for example, from a trading perspective. And it's also not the natural buying horizon from a corporate. So a lot of technical terms, but that's a key thing. And the problem is right now, how can you expand this market? Because we're talking 10, 15 gigawatts of assets realized on the PPAs, but we got to potentially realize triple, quadruple of those volumes per annum. And there's just not the market there for this if we have to stick to 10-year PPAs. I think that's probably the biggest and fascinating opportunity in the PPA space.
And just to go back to basics here, could you give an example of a transaction? Both sides of the, which both counterparties, and then the company that was building the asset and the company that was buying the power or signing the PPA. Could you give an example? And we just, let's stay away from hydrogen for a second. Let's just keep it purely electrical.
Yeah, let's assume you're a developer in Germany. You have secured the land. You have a building permit. And the only thing what you need is a secured revenue. So you can basically make more of the equity you have. You can get financing. So you sit there, you look at the market, you look at what prices there are, what you could sell your power, and you start to strategize. So what type of lending could I get? How could I sell my power? When you have defined that, you try and go out in the market and try to source a PPA. For example, you would conduct RFQ. By doing so, you get offers, and then you have to compare those offers. An RFQ is a request for quotation. So you go out in a structured manner and you get quotes, you get offers. And typically when you get offers, you see that you have to compare apples and oranges and bananas and sometimes even something else. So the first challenge is then how can I compare those different offers that they are the same? If you're happy with those offers, everyone agreed, especially also the lender, you try to close this PPA. That's a process which typically takes up to 12 months. As we just mentioned, it is a high-stake negotiation as typically hundreds of millions of euros are invested in the underlying asset.
So if I've got this right, what happens is company X, I don't know, Wind Farm Limited or Wind Farm Inc. comes along and says, I want to build a wind farm. I want to spend 500 million euros on a wind farm. And that's not the same company that's going to use all the power. So they say, I'm going to build a wind farm and I need to find someone out there who's going to buy that power over a long period, 10, 15 years. And those, you get a load of quotations. There's lots of different types of buyers. We're going to talk about that in a second. and then you contract with them over 10 or 15 years. And that whole process takes 2 to 12 months. So it's a big deal. And Pexapark, you're right in the middle of that, aren't you?
Correct. So we could support the entire process. So we start at the very beginning where we would just give price transparency. So what could I get selling my power in the market? Then we can help define the strategy. So we'd have appropriate tools that you can size the PPA. You can look at the right structure for you, what type of revenue security you need for your project. And then we would also have people that help you to get the transaction done, really negotiate, structure the PPA until it's closed.
And can you just give an overview of the type of folks involved in the transaction? So who are the big players in? Because a lot of people listening to this have maybe never even heard of PPAs or even that it exists. But it's massive, and there's, you know, billions of euros, maybe tens of billions of euros transacted in it. Who are the big players? Who are the big buyers? Of course, on the news, you hear a lot about the tech companies with data centers who are buying lots of power. But what does the market look like at the moment?
Well, the market is very fragmented. So you have a lot of developers that are developing assets. These are, we call them the sell side. Then on the buy side, you used to have a lot of utilities and traders, but nowadays it's like 80% are corporate off-takers. So as you mentioned, for example, IT data centers, that's approximately 30% already, just to power up Google Cloud and Amazon Cloud. And then you have the classical energy-intensive industries, like in the metals and mining sectors, which are buying power in bulk over long-term. Who else is involved? Lenders and legals. So these are the four parties typically involved in a bigger PPA transaction.
And how long is a typical PPA? Is it 10 years? Is it 15 years? Or is it longer? And also, what's the longest PPA that you guys have you've supported?
Well, we're coming from an age where it used to be 10 to 15 years. And why 10 to 15 years? This was tied initially to the asset life cycle, how long will my asset last, and also trying to secure for that period the revenue. Because if you secure your revenue, you can get financing. And the bank looks at how secure is this revenue. And the more secure it is, the easier for you to get bank financing.
And now we're going to take it up a gear with the more exciting bits. So we're going to talk about top trends in PPAs right now. You guys have got so much data at Pexapark. Really interested to know. I've asked you for three, and I haven't read the answers yet, so it's going to be interesting. And then we're going to go on to your contrarian views. But firstly, what's hot right now in PPAs?
There are many things hot, but probably the hottest topic right now is co-location. So in the past, we used to have just standalone onshore wind or solar projects, but that was in an age when the penetration of renewables in the grid was very low. And now, as penetration of renewables increasing, and we have the so-called, I love this name, cannibalization risk and balancing risk increasing, it makes sense, even more sense, to add storage to the asset. Now, if you add storage to the asset, you have a bit more complexity because there is a value associated with this storage. And we call this hybrid PPA. So we're seeing more and more of those PPAs that regulate not just the offtake of power, but also the storage allocated to this unit of capacity. The other big trend is shorter term PPAs. When we talked before, PPAs were associated with long-term contracts, 10, 15 years, because of the financing. Now, the thing is that short-term PPAs get such a big premium compared to longer-dated contracts. Just to make you an example, on average, currently in Europe, you would get up to 20 euros more if you just sell 5 years instead of 10 years.
Just to interrogate that a second. The thing about this market is it reminds me of the bond market, in that it's almost like an annuity where you get a coupon or you get a regular payment and you're setting the terms for that. And there's different durations that you can look at, different yield curves, if you like. So you said 20 euros. So just to get this right, a 5-year PPA generally has higher prices, 20 euros per megawatt hour higher than a 10-year or longer PPA. So if you're a wind farm and you're selling power long term, a shorter contract you get paid more for than a longer contract, because the market thinks over the long term prices will come down, base load prices will come down, and that will affect renewables in that way. Have I got that right?
Yeah, pointing out the right thing. So what is very important is this is what you fetch today. So if you're in the market today and you're selling 5 or 10 years, you might get 20 euro more. That doesn't say anything what the price will be in 5 or 10 years. That's just what you're able to secure now. This can change within weeks. So that's a market situation as it is today, but that can change. So the worst thing you can do being active in the PPA market is get a quote today and then do nothing for the next 3 to 6 months and having the feeling that you can go back to the market and just close at the price you had before. Prices are changing daily. And now coming back to, so you get 20 euros more for your 5-year PPA. Now you go back to your lender and say, hey, I get 20 euros more if I sell just 5 years. And the lender will say, okay, that's interesting. But if you only secure for 5 years, even at a higher price, let me recalculate at what cost I can finance you. And here is the optimization question. It will probably carry a higher cost of debt. And the interesting question is, at what point does it make sense? And there's a huge premium paid for actually securing long-term debt, or that there's a willingness to do so as people want to have long-term secured revenue. And I think this points the way to an interesting development in the market, as ultimately, I believe, if you're able to go down this short-term PPA route, much more capacity can be realized on the PPAs.
Huge. We heard it here first. Just to make sure I got this right. So we are about to build a wind farm. And as part of getting the financing to build the wind farm in the first place, we need to find an offtaker. We need to find a buyer. So we go to the PPA market. And what the lender wants, what the bank wants, who's going to lend us the money, they want us to have a deal where someone's going to pay a lot of money for the power for a long time. And if you have a lot of money for the power for a long time, your interest rate from the bank to get asset finance is going to be a bit lower. But you can get higher prices in short term. So what you're saying is there's two curves that we're going to cross at some point. I don't know. I can't really do it here with my hands. And what matters is the intersection between those curves of the asset financing, your cost of capital, and the duration and certainty that you can have in long-term revenues against a market. The market that is pricing in, this is a key part, the market thinks over the long term, baseload power is going to come cheaper.
Correct. That's to the point. It's an optimization problem in a rather illiquid market. So those data points change maybe only every week, not daily. But that's the fascinating work we have every day on the PPA market. A very important point here is that there would be also a huge interest from the corporate side to do shorter PPAs, because the natural cycle within an industrial company is typically not to secure for 10 years. Yes, you might be a data center, or yes, you're in the aluminium or metal space, but the typical industrial, he just wants to buy for 1 or 2 years. So having the ability to do shorter term PPAs can unlock so much more demand. So we're talking 1,000 terawatt hours of industrial demand in Europe a year, 1,000. When you look at the corporate PPA market, we just got covered a fraction of it. And the only way to expand this is by having shorter term PPAs next to other things. But that's a key thing which we would have to tackle.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you're a normal business and you've got cash that, you know, your cash flow you can only really rely on for a year or two, how on earth can you sign a bankable PPA with a green power producer when they want 10 years or longer? So this future where you have short term PPAs, say 1 year or 2 year, which actually looks a bit more like the current power market with suppliers, business suppliers, but with direct to source, where you're buying it from the owner of the asset. In that world, this PPA thing, this contract between both sides, how copy and pasteable is it? You know, how standardized is a PPA document? Just to give us an idea, you know, how many pages or how many words is one of these things? Is it like, I don't know, the Bible, or is it, you know, a couple of pages of A4? Where is it in between that?
You sign a Bible, and then you have amendments, 10 amendments. And that's very simple. The short-term PPA market is highly standardized. You have a master agreement, which you have to go through once. And after that, you can sign on two pagers. The long-term PPA market is very much bespoke because we're talking 200 transactions a year, huge underlying investment sums. So there is more interest, more lawyers, and hence you get very bespoke agreements, which can run into 80, 90, 100 pages.
Okay, wow. So still plenty of work for the lawyers.
Yes, you always need them.
Another thing I want to talk about here before we move on, which is, it sounds very exciting, but I don't know what it is. It's active revenue management. What's that?
Just imagine you started doing development of renewables 10, 15 years ago. You had your first asset and you have one PPA, which takes all the volume. Nothing to do after you closed. But now you're adding asset by asset in different countries. And the structures of the PPA start to change. Maybe in some asset you only sell 80% or 50%. One PPA is 5 years, the other is 7 years. Oh, and then there's a whole lot of other things to do. You have these so-called guarantees of origin, which have an extra value. You also have balancing needs. Maybe you have a storage co-located with one of your assets. So over time, your portfolio becomes much more complex. And up to today, most investors are not actively managing all of their PPAs. And there's so much money in there. So what we're seeing is that bigger players are building themselves a small team, taking care of their PPAs, their route to market, their hedging, their geos, all technical names. But in the end, it just pays off to have a person or two taking care of energy sales, actively managing them.
One of the things that struck me about your answer there was you said some PPAs might not be for 100% of the power. So that's an important thing here. You might have, if you can answer how this works, say you're building a 100 megawatt wind farm and Google comes along and says, right, we're building a load of data centers. We want 80 megawatts of your 100 megawatts. So you want 80% of it. Does that PPA contract have to find someone else to take the other 20 megawatts? Or would you just sign it and only 80% of the total wind farm's power capacity has been transacted? I'm aware that we're talking about megawatts and not megawatt hours, and there's a capture rate issue with wind farms and blah, blah, blah. But in simple terms, what happens when you've got a buyer for only 80% of your power?
Right now, what happens is you have an intermediary. So there's always a third party involved. Typically, it's a trader or a utility, and they're providing all the complementary necessary services you need so that you can fulfill your contractual obligations from the seller to Google. And this comes at the cost. And if you have a big portfolio, it starts to make sense to insource some of those intermediary activities into your house, and have a little desk with two people that take care of that. That's active revenue management.
All right. Now it's your time to plug before the contrarian view. So anything that you want to get out there to our listeners, or any comments on the current state of play?
Yeah. I'm doing this now for 15 years, and for 15 years it has been growth, just more assets, more green assets, more wind, more solar. And then it was supercharged by cheap capital. And I think there's now an inflection point. So we have reached a phase with a lot of renewables now in the system, which is causing changes to the market. And the area of cheap money is over. So this is changing the way business is done. It's reshifting the focus, and it's shifting from a purely growth to operational excellence. So investors are starting to look much more at managing their existing portfolios, extracting most value. And I think that's a new cycle for the industry. And it's very typical for high capital intensive industries. So that's nothing new. But for the renewable energy market as we know it, and for most players, it takes a bit of readjusting, but that's a major inflection point.
I don't really know what you're plugging there, but I mean, I enjoyed it. But interested to discuss this. So you say at the end of cheap capital is here, but it looks like you know, the Fed's going to bring some rate cuts in, let's say 3 or 4 next year. Bank of Japan's still staying negative. You know, Europe hasn't really caught up. It looks like 2024, we could be back into a world where cost of capital comes down to, of course, not, you know, not 2021 levels, but cost of capital comes down to a level where hurdle rates don't prohibit assets getting built. So I'm a little bit hopeful, actually. That said, there's a mind shift. There's a sentiment shift that has happened, which we've certainly noticed, that asset owners are saying, okay, how do I become more informed? And how do I run this better? How do I run this leaner? I don't need a 100-person organization to run, you know, I'm not going to put numbers on it, but I might have too many people to do the stuff I need to do right now. And that's really interesting for the market to go through that.
Correct. You need more data, you need more systems, you need more skills. The market is more demanding, so capital costs more, even if next year it will come down. PPAs are costly. The risks to managing and selling renewables are higher, balancing cost, price volatility. So to succeed in this new environment, it is exactly as you say, you need to be in better control of your assets, of your revenues. And that's the big shift. That's the inflection point in the renewable industry.
Okay, now on to the contrarian views. Where do you want to get started here, Luca? Do you want to go for a big hitter to start with?
Yeah, let's be a bit provocative. I think corporate PPAs are a bit overrated. So everyone talks about corporate PPAs. You could make a living by organizing conferences, and they are cool, but I think overrated. And why? It needs intermediaries. So intermediaries, somehow traders, utilities have a bad image, but the market wouldn't work without them. There is profile risk. There's balancing risk. There are the geos to sell. There is the aggregation effects. Someone needs to take care of that, and they have a role to play. And sometimes there's a bit of a conflicting point who shall get the power. We don't need to have an intermediary, but I think that's a wrong view. I think they work together, and you need them. So I hope to see more traders, more utilities. They are a net positive for the PPA market.
I wasn't expecting that, because surely the future that you want at Pexapark is no intermediaries, some type of kind of peer-to-peer liquidity provided by the edge of the market, you know, the buyers and sellers themselves. Surely, I'm just going to throw the other side here. So surely all of those midstream traders, intermediaries, they're just adding cost onto the system, aren't they? By the way, I don't actually believe this, but I just want to hear you answer it.
Yeah. The question is, can we lower the service cost they provide? So typically an intermediary takes risks or reduces transaction costs. So they provide a service. The question is whether technology can help to reduce this transaction cost and this intermediary cost. But without intermediation, it doesn't work. And you see this all over the market. For example, corporate PPAs. So we talk about those huge corporate PPAs done by a large offshore wind park and the data center. But this is just 10% or 5% of the overall market. The big demand is with smaller off-takers, small industrials, small and medium business enterprises. And to reach them, you need intermediation. And intermediation can be something very modern. It can be digital. But you need to have intermediaries investing in platforms, in standardization, to allow reducing this transaction cost. So intermediation per se is something good. The question is, who is the intermediary?
All right, so corporate PPAs are a little bit overrated, and you think intermediaries are cool. I actually agree with you, absolutely. What else, what other contrarian views do you have? I know you've got a few.
Baseload PPAs are cool.
Baseload PPAs are cool. That is incredibly contrarian.
Now, what is a baseload PPA?
Well, yeah, that's exactly what I was going to ask you. What is a baseload PPA?
A baseload PPA is a contract where you deliver for every single hour the same amount of power, electricity. Now, you being a renewable producer, every hour you might produce more or less than your contracted capacity. So you need to sell on the market or buy back on the market. And prices on the market at that time could be higher or lower. So yes, when you sell a baseload PPA, you engage in different risks. Now, typically, such a baseload PPA comes at a big premium compared to other PPAs because the seller is taking on some risks. And what happened is that some of those baseload PPAs were mispriced, were contracted on too high levels and caused severe stress for some sellers. So they got a bad press. But what I want to point out is there's tremendous values in baseload PPA. That's the product most industrials want. And ultimately, we talk always now about this 24/7 renewable power, carbon-free. You need exactly the same skills, the same data, the pricing skills, the management systems to be able to price and run a baseload PPA as it is for 24/7. If you're saying we can't do baseload PPAs, we would actually be saying we can't do 24/7. So by saying baseload PPAs are cool, I'm saying 24/7 energy is cool. What we need to focus on is what does it take that you can do this successfully as a renewable power producer? We have this myopic thinking in the renewable industry is that I need to sell 10 years, the price has to be high, and all the risks have to be with the offtaker. No, we have to go beyond that. We have to think of what does the customer want to buy? And they don't want to buy the profile from a solar park. They want to have baseload or 24/7. And that's why I say baseload PPAs are cool.
Yeah, someone's got to buy it from the market or provide it other ways, right? So is that going to be the buyer or the seller? I guess if you're an industrial, a steel maker, or I don't know, you make whatever, part of the reason why you're buying a PPA is because you kind of, you don't want to be involved in the power side, you just want to buy it. So then for you to be lumped with all the complexity of, you know, being exposed to all of that risk, it may be a barrier to a lot of these industrials actually getting involved. I'm just talking about corporate PPAs now. So yeah, they baseload PPAs are cool, but I do have a question. So can you then go out and so say this bit? It's basically a flat line PPA, right? It's like a continuous block, and then there is going to be some nuance around that block where there'll be a drop in generation or over generation or whatever. Can you then go to another third party and push that risk onto someone else, like some sort of swap instrument? I don't know whether you'd call it a basis swap or whatever. Can you find someone else who will then take that?
That's the intermediaries. That's the traders and utilities that provide exactly this service.
Cool. All right. We've done another one, another contrarian view. And that wasn't that contrarian, actually. So could you amp it up a little bit for the last one? What's your third contrarian view?
I think shale gas saved us.
Shale gas saved us.
Yes. Shale gas saved us. I think there's a lot of bad mouthing in the energy industry. So we in the renewables talk bad about the fossil, about nuclears and vice versa. And when gas deliveries were weaponized before the Ukrainian war, I think what many of us have forgotten is that all this LNG now, which is arriving in Europe and allowing us to continue, this is due to gas fracking in the US, which has been highly contentious and which we don't want to do in Europe. And I just acknowledge that. And it goes even further. I just listened to a few podcasts about advanced geothermal energy. And this wouldn't be possible without a technological breakthrough from gas fracking. So the good might lead to the bad might lead to the good. And I think we're doing just too much agonizing against each other instead of thinking how the overall system could be improved. That's why I'm saying shale gas saved us.
Shale gas. So fracking saved us. I actually completely agree with you. I think everyone at Modo knows that I get a real bee in my bonnet sometimes at company away days or after a couple of beers, where there's just this, I find the energy transition disdain for oil and gas sometimes annoying and sometimes really, really beyond that. The idea that our whole life runs on oil and gas, and that by we as a community of people who are trying to do renewables are somehow, you know, better or morally better than these people who have to go on helicopters for 3 weeks at a time into the middle of the North Sea and get gas out of the, you know, gas out so we can be warm for winter and have our Christmas dinner or whatever. And then for for this idea that we could be in these comfortable offices doing renewable stuff. You know, we're the good guys and they're the bad guys. It really gets on my nerves. And yet, now I live in the US, I live in Texas, and the impact of shale, the impact of fracking on not only the price of energy over there, but also the feeling of energy security they have, means they can actually make big, bold bets elsewhere, geopolitically, in lots of different ways. And I think you can only do that with that type of, you know, it doesn't matter what the world does, we've got our own energy. There's lots of downsides to it. And, you know, it's just been COP last week. There's loads and loads of things that we need to fix. We really need to fix flaring and methane emissions and all that other stuff. But 100% agree with you. The mindset that fracking is 100% bad is just so short-sighted.
Yeah, fully agree. In the end, we want to create a more efficient system, but we need so much more electricity. I believe in electrification being the most efficient solution for most things. But boy, we need to build. And fossil is going to stay for quite some while. And we shouldn't just be antagonizing, but just focusing on building stuff and making it more efficient.
I mean, coming back to our previous conversation, though, about cost of capital, it would be interesting to know, to see what happens. I mean, if rates were to stay as high as they are for another couple of years, that is big trouble for a lot of these shale developers and gas producers.
Well, it's equal for everyone. Capital of cost is increasing for everyone. It's as for shale, as for renewables, in the end, it will just lead to aggregation. We'll have a much quicker consolidation in the industry.
Awesome. Luca, always a pleasure to speak to you. I want to say a massive thank you for taking the time to speak to us on Christmas week of all weeks. And I look forward to receiving some Pex Park socks in the post or at our next meeting.
Thanks, Quentin. It was an honor to be here. Thanks.
Thank you.